If you've got your Bible with you, would you turn to the book of Luke, chapter 2? Very familiar words. Luke, chapter 2. And we're going to begin at verse 1. Luke 2, verse 1. In those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. This was the first census that took place while Quirinius was the governor of Syria. And everyone went to his own town to register. So Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to Bethlehem, to the town of David, because he belonged to the house and line of David. He went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for the baby to be born, and she gave birth to her firstborn, a son. She wrapped him in cloths and placed him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. Can I just say thanks to the elders for allowing me to do this mini-series? It's a great honour. I don't take it for granted, so bless the elders for their wisdom. And their kindness. I love travelling. I love going on a journey. The love of travelling began when I was about 2 years old. And we lived in Anfield, as you know. And my dad would take me on a Sunday morning. My family didn't go to church. He'd take me on a Sunday morning on the tram to the pierhead. And there we would get the ferry across to Seacombe. And we would walk along the front up to New Brighton. And we'd get part of the way along the front, you know, the wall. And my dad would sit me on the seawall and he'd put his arms around me. And he would show me all of the ships. It was nothing like it is now. You know, there'd be many, many ships in the river. And he'd tell me which countries they came from, because he knew, you know, India, Africa or whatever. And I was mesmerized at 2 years old. And that's when the love of traveling began. And then when I was 8 years old, we went on a family holiday to the Isle of Man, the only holiday we ever had growing up. We had a week in the Isle of Man. And we got on the boat along with thousands of other people. There used to be, I think I've told you, six ships on a Saturday. Six boats from Liverpool, 2,500 people on each ship going to the Isle of Man. So we got on this boat. It was called the King Ori. I was 8 years old, and my dad stood me in the bow of the ship and gave me a pair of red ceramic binoculars. And he said, son, just stand there and you'll be the first person to see the Isle of Man. I said, okay, imagine that, 8 years old. Imagine the health and safety these days. So he stood me in the bow of the boat. And then he said to me these words. He said, don't let anyone use those binoculars. I said, okay. Then my dad went for the cup of tea with mum and sisters. And I stood in the bow of that ship for 4 hours. Really, I never moved. My dad, I couldn't get out. I was right in the front. So I stood there for 4 hours, and I was the first to glimpse the Isle of Man just through the sea mist. It was absolutely magical, and I could barely contain the excitement. And that excitement of traveling, that excitement, that wonder, it's never left me. Some years later, I found those ceramic binoculars in a cupboard at home, and that's when I first noticed the words in big white letters on the binoculars. They said, "Property of the Empire Theatre." Not to be removed. So when I asked my dad about this, he said apparently my granddad hadn't seen those words, and so it slipped the binoculars in his pocket after the performance. So it can happen. I like traveling, and Lynn and I have been privileged to visit many wonderful places in the Far East, Australia, New Zealand, America, and Africa. And I've been to Uganda 4 times on mission. Once with Chris, we had a fantastic time. It's a country I really like. It's my favourite country in the whole world, Uganda. And I've got good friends there that I'm in touch with every day. Well, on my first trip, a group of us, about 15 of us, we got in a minibus and we were just staying outside of Kampala in a little hotel. And we got on a bus and we went to a place, a minibus called Jinja, J-I-N-J-A. We got out the bus, got in a small canoe-type boat and sailed across the River Nile. And when we got partway across the Nile, there's an island that's a little bigger than this hall here. And we all got off, it was high risk, the water is rushing past us. And to our right-hand side was Lake Victoria, the biggest lake in Africa. And for many years, people thought the lake was the source of the River Nile. Then our guide was standing there looking at the river that's in front of us, where it started, and the lake. Then our guide said, look. And as we looked, where the lake ended and the river began, water was bubbling up from underneath the surface. And we were actually looking at the source of the River Nile. And it begins as an underground river. It's not the lake that does the Nile, it's this underground river. It was a stunning sight. That's what Dr. Livingstone spent so many years trying to find. And we stood on that spot. We had communion on that small island, then we put bread and wine into the water. It would take 3 months for that bread and wine to get to the Mediterranean, because the Nile is the longest river in the world. So to prepare for that journey to Uganda was a lot of work, as Chris and Danny would know. We had to get visas, flight tickets. The journey took 24 hours. There's no direct flight from the UK. We had to collect the aid we were taking. 13 inoculations. You know what I'm like with medical stuff. 13 inoculations. I passed out in the Tropical School of Medicine when I had to go for the yellow fever injection. And she sat me on the bed, the nurse, and she said, "This may be painful." I said, "I'm not really very good at needles." So she laid me down on the bed and she gave me this needle. I think it was about... I didn't look, but it was somewhere it felt about that long. So I had 13 inoculations to go to Uganda. We had to take medicine, sprays, malaria tablets, long sleeve clothing to keep the mosquitoes off, foreign currency, sermons to be written, plus lots more. It took months to get ready. It's a heck of a task. But the preparations for that journey were nothing compared to the preparations for the journey that Mary and Joseph would have to make. If you were with us last week, or you were listening last week, we left a story with Mary being told by Gabriel that she'd become pregnant. Imagine that moment. 14 years old, at most. And an angel visits her and says, "You're going to have a son." Imagine that. Well, from then she went to stay with the cousin Elizabeth for 3 months, who was also pregnant with John the Baptist. She'd been pregnant for 6 months. Then Mary returns home after 3 months to Nazareth. And for the next 6 months, life must have been very difficult for Mary and Joseph and their families. You can imagine the gossip, the sideways looks, the friends who now avoided them, the shame, the scandal, in a little tiny village called Nazareth. It's not very big these days. The baby was clearly growing inside Mary. There was no hiding it. Everybody knew she was pregnant. Imagine a cancelled wedding, the wedding she dreamed of since she was a young child. Now it was never going to happen. This was not the life that Mary was expecting. It was not the life that she dreamed of. And you know, church, maybe for you, life didn't turn out the way that you'd hoped. Maybe for you, it's been a life of disappointment after disappointment. Maybe you have another life that you dreamed of. And you wonder where God is. And you wonder what the future holds. Maybe that's you today. Well, such thoughts will have run through the minds of Mary and Joseph and their families. 14 years old, a baby on the way, engaged but not married. How are they going to manage? You know, if life was hard now, it's only going to get harder with the arrival of a baby. We never think about that. Where are they going to live? Will Joseph's family take them in? Will he throw them out? Will the rabbi want to stone Mary to death? They've got nowhere to move to. They don't know what to do. Will they have to leave the village and go to somewhere where nobody knows them? You can imagine a conversation, can't you? All of you. Surely they will have thought life can't get any harder. Life can't get any more difficult. And maybe you're thinking that right now this morning as you're listening. Surely life will improve. But it doesn't. Sometimes it gets harder. You all know that. Mary and Joseph would understand that. But just before the baby is born, in the ninth month, Luke chapter 2, you've read it, you've got it in front of you there. It says these words: Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. That was for tax purposes. They wanted to know who was who so they could gather more taxes. So Caesar Augustus issues this decree to raise more taxes. It was the first census since that took place while Quirinius was the governor of Syria, and everyone went to his own town to register. So Caesar Augustus, back in Rome, he issues a command, and you don't disobey a command. You can disobey a command from our government if you wish and maybe get into a bit of bother, but when Caesar Augustus issues a command, you have to do it. There are no exceptions. There's no exemptions. Now, Caesar's name was not Augustus. I don't know whether you know that or not. His name wasn't Augustus. That was his title. His name was Gaius Octavius. And he was a successful and very powerful ruler. After all, the gates of Janus, which you can still go to in Rome, the gates of Janus, they were only ever opened when there was war. And it was symbolically opened. If Rome went to war, they would open the gates of Janus and the armies would march out. It was a very symbolic act. When those gates opened, Rome knew it was at war. But those gates had been closed for many years because of the Pax Romana, the Roman peace. It was enforced by brutality, but the world mostly was at peace. So imagine this. Caesar Augustus is in Rome. And he knows his position in the known world. He's the ruler of the known world. And Octavius decides, I need a better title than Octavius. Something greater even than king or dictator. I want a name that implies divinity. A name that is above every other name. That's what he wanted. A name like Caesar Augustus. Caesar the August One, the Venerable, Caesar the Divine. He saw himself as a god. He was Rome's first emperor. It wasn't Julius Caesar, it was Augustus. And when he gave a command, it had to be obeyed. So you can imagine, when this command comes through the village to Nazareth, you've all got to return, or you've got to return to your hometown. You can imagine how that young couple received that news. The birth imminent, Mary now living in Joseph's father's home, Matthew 1:24 tells you that. With all the stress and tension, still not married. Imagine the stress, imagine the tension. And now a command to register in your hometown. In Joseph's case, that was Bethlehem, 90 miles away. It's a long way. 90 miles on foot or by donkey with a pregnant 14-year-old girl. Imagine that. But they had no choice because Caesar had issued the command. No exceptions, no exemptions. But you know, church, here's the thing. Joseph never had to take Mary with him. Only the head of the household was required to register. That fulfilled the law. But Joseph does decide to take Mary with him. So why would he do that? Why did he do that? 14 years old, about to give birth, 90 miles. Why would he take Mary with him? Well, the Bible doesn't say, but I don't think it takes much imagination to understand why he would do that. Remember, it's been 9 months since Gabriel visited Mary and Joseph. 9 months in which their life had changed forever. 9 months being surrounded by people who, A, thought you were lying, and some thought you were insane. That's what they thought of Mary. 9 months of being shunned or whispered about. 9 months. And I think Joseph will have decided he didn't want Mary to give birth, surrounded by those who doubted her. Doubted her character, doubted her sanity. He wanted Mary with him, not with anyone else. That speaks volumes about the character of Joseph. It really does. It also speaks volumes about how difficult life must have been for those 9 months in Nazareth. Because that journey was very high risk. We never consider this. We don't as a church. We don't generally. As in Christianity, we never consider it because we know the rest of the story. That's the problem. If this was 2,000 years ago, you would be reacting very differently than what I'm telling you now. You would be appalled at Mary. You would be ashamed at the family. You'd probably want to stone her. You'd probably want to cast her out, minimum. You'd want nothing to do with her 2,000 years ago. But we never consider, because we look backwards and we put all of our stuff backwards, and it's not good. It's the first thing they teach you at Bible college. What did it mean there and then? And we project our world back into the world of Mary and Joseph, almost as if we think, how inconvenient, 9 months pregnant, having to travel to Bethlehem, and it's Christmas time as well. You do. That's how you think. But of course it wasn't Christmas. There was no Christmas. There was no Christmas. Bethlehem wouldn't be decorated with Christmas trees and fairy lights, Santa Claus and carols, no roast turkey, mince pies, no stockings on the mantelpiece. There was no Christmas, church. It wasn't even December. It was probably March or April. It wasn't Christmas, but it was very high risk. So Caesar gives a command. Everyone return to your hometown to be taxed. Little realizing he was fulfilling the prophecy of Micah 2. Isn't God great? Never mind Caesar. Isn't God great? Micah 5:2. And that declared that the Messiah would be born in Bethlehem. Where else was the son of David to be born except the city of David? Where else would the bread of life be born except in Bethlehem, which means bread of life, house of bread? So Caesar gives the command, but God ordains the plan. Isn't that great? Yeah. Our governments are not in charge of our life. Your boss isn't in charge of your life. Your wife's not even in charge of your life. Or your husband's not in charge of your life. Or your son. We have someone greater. God is in charge of our life, church. Caesar gives the command, but God ordains the plan. Behind the scenes, God is working everything out. Can I tell you this morning, whatever your life looks like today, if you follow God behind the scenes, he's working it out for your good. Everything. You think even the bad stuff, he's working it out for your good. Should send us out with a spring in our step, shouldn't it? Full of zeal to tell others about this God that is in control, that knows what he's doing. No matter what your life looks like today, if your hand is in the hand of God, he is working things out. And it will be fine. It will be okay. Not just in heaven, it will be okay. But Mary and Joseph still had to take that journey. So I want to tell you this one. Don't sentimentalize Christmas. Don't romanticize it. See it for what it was. A 14-year-old girl and Joseph, just a couple of years older, both teenagers, faced with a mighty task. Get to Bethlehem and hope everything goes okay. So you can imagine the preparations, buying some food for the journey. That would take about a week. A blanket to keep out the cold. A water flask, maybe a donkey for Mary. No, the Bible doesn't say she traveled on a donkey. We've inserted that through Hollywood, I think, but he might have got a donkey. I hope he did. Otherwise, he'd have been in trouble, but we don't know. Well, maybe a donkey for Mary. Maybe some hay for the donkey. Then he'd have to travel from Nazareth, which is high up in the mountain, in the hills. And he'd have to travel down the Jordan Valley, about 90 miles. They'd follow the River Jordan, basically, down the valley. They'd have to sleep by the roadside. And the reason for that is if Mary and Joseph will have had relatives on the way, they wouldn't have let a pregnant, unmarried girl into the house. Isn't that interesting? So for Mary and Joseph, it would be the roadside with a stone for a pillow. So I want to tell you, church, don't you ever say God doesn't know how hard life can be. When the Son of God was being carried in Mary's womb, for 9 months, she barely had a true friend in the world. And now, just a week before he will be born, his mother Mary is sleeping at the roadside in the dirt and the dust. Two teenagers alone wondering what will be. The writer Philip Yancey says, when God sent his son to earth, he played by the rules. He didn't put him in a palace. There was no NHS. There was no supportive family. Nobody did understand. When Jesus came to this earth, he knew what a life of toughness would be. Preparations made, they had set out, probably telling the family to be back in 2 weeks. You ever thought about that? We'll be back in a fortnight, week there, week back. But they didn't know that it would be over 2 years before they'd set foot in Nazareth again. So imagine Joseph holding the reins, maybe some said goodbye, Mary seated on the back of the donkey probably, and they begin the descent down the hills towards Bethlehem. Lots of people are on the move. The whole country is on the move. The whole world is on the move. But Mary and Joseph are all alone, or so they think. For the Lord God and the whole of heaven's angels are watching them intently. Think about that. Everyone was watching in heaven. Because in just 7 days, the gift would be revealed. And if you want to know what the gift was, then you'll have to come to the carol service next Sunday night. Bless you.